You're listening to The Quarterdeck with Benjamin Strong and Coast Guard Admiral Jim Watson.
Hi, it's Ben Strong from Amver.com, and I'd like to welcome everyone to the fourth edition of The Quarterdeck. My co-host, Admiral Watson, is with me. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, Ben. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. A little excited today. It's been a busy week in Amver, and for you guys down in the 5th District in our Atlantic area, we've had two big rescues go on this past week. The first involving a Royal Caribbean cruise ship, the Celebrity Equinox. As you know, they helped out some German sailors that were 850 miles east of Bermuda last Friday. I believe that was May 6th. That's out there quite a ways, isn't it, sir?
That is, and that's where Amver vessels, participants in Amver, are just absolutely critical. They are essential to saving lives in that area of the world.
Yeah, those sailors were on a 43-foot catamaran, and I know that they suffered some vessel damage from some bad weather, but they were also running out of fuel, and the Celebrity Equinox was able to divert, give them that fuel, and really without the assistance and the partnership of our Amver participants, those are folks that may never have gotten any assistance that far out.
Yeah, and you know, we do have, I think, pretty good capabilities in the Coast Guard to receive those Mayday calls, and then all we really need at that point is to figure out, well, how can we get an asset to them? Fortunately, the Celebrity Equinox was near enough and was able to divert, and it was a very successful outcome.
It was, and it really shows the it shows that Amver, you know, we don't just rely on a bulker or a container ship. It doesn't matter what vessel is out there. A, if you're already enrolled in Amver, you never know, we may be calling on you. And if you're not enrolled because you think perhaps your vessel, maybe it's an offshore supply vessel, whatever the case may be, if you don't think that your ship could be helpful, we could probably both agree that that any ship is helpful in an emergency. So that's why, you know, we work so hard in our office here in New York to enroll a variety, all sorts of vessels that are going to be out on the water, because we can't be everywhere. And the Celebrity Equinox just demonstrated that there really isn't a place that we can't get help to somebody when they need it. And that, you know, just follows up with Wednesday morning on May 11th, we had a ship, another catamaran, 900 miles off the coast of Boston, ended up sinking. And we had a bulker, an Amver participating ship. This was a K-Line vessel that rescued two Italian sailors. So another great case, another instance where without Amver, we may not have been able to get something there as quickly as this ship. This ship happened to have been 28 miles away from the distress location, so it really doesn't get any better than that.
Right. Those sailors are very lucky when that kind of situation occurs. So kudos to both of those merchant ships and their crews for making those rescues and, you know, continuing the great tradition that we have as seafarers in looking after one another when they're in distress at sea, no matter where they are.
You know, it sounds cliche, and you know, we say that we've been saving lives at sea since 1958. One of our other taglines is ensuring no call for help goes unanswered. But when you ask these survivors, or if you ask the crews of other merchant ships that are enrolled, the world really relies on Amver, and you know, whether it be the Coast Guard's area of responsibility in the Pacific or the Atlantic, the Gulf of Mexico, the Caribbean, or anywhere in the world, really, because this has been a busy week, a busy couple of weeks where we've had a lot of requests for Amver data from around the world. I'll include a link in the show notes for rescue professionals that may work in Argentina, or we've had the French request information for the area around Grisnez. We've had requests for help come from the Mediterranean, the Far East, from all around the world. Amver isn't just our tool, the Coast Guard tool, but we want to share it with the world. And whether it be recruiting more ships into the program or encouraging our SAR shipmates and colleagues around the world to use AMVR. That's what it's there for. It's for the whole world.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've over the years put together a good system of rescue coordination centers that cover the entire world. But each one of them, like our District 5 and our District 1 rescue coordination centers, depends on the assistance of other mariners at sea. And we have AMVR is really the longest standing and most successful organization that links those other ships at sea to those rescue coordination centers so that a successful rescue can be completed. But we've also, I think, improved in other ways that are also saving lives, things like the long-range tracking and just better knowledge of where ships are at sea. So, and also better communications on the part of those that are in need of rescue, things like the EPIRBs and the satellite communications. So the trends are good, but we certainly can't let our guard down. There's always seems to be another case where somebody needs assistance and they need it quick. You can't survive long in the ocean once something terrible has gone wrong with your vessel.
That's absolutely right, and I'm glad you mentioned EPIRBs, Admiral, because the our capability to get resources to people is very good, whether it be a Coast Guard cutter or an aircraft, a helicopter, a fixed-wing aircraft. But if we don't know that you're in distress, then you know your chances decrease significantly in being rescued. And both of these cases, the sailors that were in distress had EPIRBs, had them registered appropriately. I'll include a link in the show notes on at least register. Well, I'll include links to both the national, our NOAA EPIRB database and the international registry, because if we can't hear you, we can't get you. If you don't have an EPIRB, it's very difficult to find you. And that's there needs to be a certain amount of responsibility on those that are going out to sea, whether it be in a merchant vessel or sailing in a catamaran or a sailboat or a fishing boat. So you're absolutely right, and I'm glad you mentioned that about the EPIRBs. We'll have those links in there because that's critical as well. But one of the another interesting opportunity I had a few days ago was to go up to our Coast Guard sector, Long Island Sound, and I got to sit down with some officers and talk Coast Guard officers and talk about the AMVR system. It's while our international marketing efforts are critical, I would say that making sure that our shipmates in the Coast Guard know about AMVR is equally as important. And so it was real nice to sit down over lunch and discuss AMVR with both some junior and senior officers in Sector Long Island Sound. We talked a little bit about the AMVR program, what it offers the boating, the maritime community, and what it offers the search and rescue community. And then I had a great opportunity to sit down with Commander Amy Beach from the Prevention Department. And we talked a little bit about what If I'm a mariner, I'm on a ship and I'm coming to a U.S. port, whether it be for the first time or perhaps I've traveled here, I've sailed here before. But we talked about what can a ship expect when coming into a U.S. port, and you know as well as I do, if you read the maritime newspapers or the maritime magazines, often the Coast Guard is perhaps criticized by the way we treat mariners, or there's information that may not be accurate about a boarding or an inspection process. So let's take a minute and listen to what I think is a great discussion between with Commander Amy Beach from the Prevention Department about what it's like when a ship comes to a U.S. port.
Hi, it's Ben Strong from AMVR.com, and I'm in New Haven, Connecticut at Sector Long Island Sound. Today we're going to talk a little bit about what a ship can expect when sailing into a U.S. port. There are lots of resources that are available for mariners, but some of them you may have never read, or you may not know where to look for them, but we're going to sit down with the experts here. I've got Commander Beach from Sector Long Island Sound. Commander, how are you, ma'am?
Good, thank you.
Great, I thank you for joining us. And let's talk a little bit about what a ship can expect. Again, lots of discussion on on vessels that are coming into to U.S. ports. Some of it good, some of it not so good. But let's talk a little bit about when if I'm on a 900-foot tanker and I'm coming into the port of New Haven, what kind of things can I expect from the U.S. Coast Guard?
Sure. Well, first of all, vessels that are going to be reporting to the U.S. need to make 96-hour advance notice to the National Vessel Movement Center. They can do that various ways. The preferred method is, and probably the easiest for most people, is to do it online. And that information will be transmitted to the port where the vessel is going to be going. So we'll log in every morning into, it's a database called MISL, and we'll get a download of what vessels are scheduled to come here. And that information that the vessel coming to our port will provide will be a list of crew members, what type of cargo they're going to have on board, information about their certificates, you know, have they expired, when do they expire, that type of information. And that helps us build our package as far as what we're going to go on board the vessel and look at. So once we've gotten all the information from the vessel, we'll go through, again, MISL, and we'll look at the vessel's boarding history. When was the last time they were in the U.S.? Were there any deficiencies that were mm-hmm. noted the last time that need to be cleared this time that they're in there in our port? And we can even access some of the overseas port state control inspections and see if there were any issues, you know, in the other countries where they visited. So then we'll go on board. The first thing we'll do is we'll walk on board and usually a security member of the crew will meet us.
About how many folks come on board?
It depends partly on the type of vessel, right. How large, but no more than four people unless okay. we're doing training.
Right.
You know, 'cause what we try to do to make it easier and quicker for the vessel so that they can get onto what they want to do, which is, you know, offloading the vessel or loading the vessel,
right.
is we'll try and break it up into teams. We'll have a team that will do the deck and a team that will go down and do the engine room and a lot of the mechanical stuff. So, okay. you know, they'll get on board, they'll go up, they'll meet the master, they'll sit down, they should explain exactly what it is they're going to be looking for, you know, what documents they're going to need, and they'll say, I'll need your chief engineer or first engineer, and I'll need, you know, your first mate, whoever, and they'll break off into teams. You'll have a team that'll start going through the crew members' passports or identification, checking licensing to make sure, you know, what has been submitted to the National Vessel Movement Center matches, what's actually there on board, that type
right.
of thing. So it'll be a lot of administrative paperwork type stuff that'll start it off. While that team is doing that, the other team will usually break off and go down and start doing tests of emergency steering.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll check to make sure that there's proper communication between the bridge and emergency steering, that they'll make sure engine rooms are relatively clean. I mean, we're not looking to be able to eat off the floors,
right.
but you can't have excessive oil, fire hazards, things like that. So we're focusing primarily on the safety aspect and really to the benefit of the crew members that are on board that have to sail these vessels to make sure that what they're going on is seaworthy and we'll get them to the next port and the port thereafter. And then we'll go on, we'll check navigation. Usually it's the same team that went and checked the licenses and the passport information. They'll go up, they'll do checks of the navigation, again, check steering, check alarms to make sure the alarms are working and things along those lines. So it's
mm-hmm.
it's primarily focused on safety. Of course, you know, since 9/11, security has also started to play a role in that. So we'll usually go through and ask to meet with the vessel security officer and ask a few questions to, you know, it shouldn't be a kind of stump the chump, if you will, type of thing, but
right.
just to say, you know, do they seem to know their procedures, their processes? We are not, unless we have major concerns, we should not be looking at the vessel's security plan. That is security information.
Right.
So if they're asked to provide it, they shouldn't feel bad to say no to the Coast Guard team that asked them. There should be a specific reason, and frankly, the Coast Guard team has to get authority from the flag state to look at those sections, and then it has to be a specific, well, I need to look at this section because we just did a bomb drill, and it doesn't seem like they really knew what their procedures
okay.
were supposed to be, so we want to see what it was they were supposed to do according to the plan. It
sure.
doesn't match. We'll do fire drills, life-saving drills. Some ports, we don't do it here, but some ports will go, you know, to the point of having fog machines so that, you know, these mariners who hopefully are never going to have to be in a situation of fighting a fire on board see what it's like to not be able to see your hand, you know, in front of your face because there's so much smoke in an area, and try and make those drills realistic. But it's all to make sure that, you know, not only the vessels but the mariners out there are safe and make it to their next destination.
It sounds like a much more collaborative process than it is an adversarial process, really.
It should be. You know, again, our whole point is to make sure that the mariners are safe and that they're getting what they need from their companies, be it materials to repair problems that they have on board. Mm-hmm. And that's not unusual for us to go on board a ship, have a boarding, and have a crew member say, you know, we've been trying to get this part and we can't get this part. Could you put that down on your deficiency list? You know, and you know, so we try and help out as much as we can. And I certainly expect, and I think any port that you go to, if you were to talk to my counterpart, would expect that the teams going on are professional, and that they're treating the mariners with respect, the respect that they deserve.
And these boarding procedures, whether it be here in New Haven where we are today, or in Houston, or L.A., Long Beach, or New York, pretty standard across the board for the U.S. Coast Guard, aren't they?
They should be very standard, and I can provide a link. We have what are called 840 books. And they kind of go through a general outline of what material inspections we should be doing, equipment inspections, things along those lines. Certainly, there can be different interpretations on how you know, a policy should be implemented. So you're going to see differences occasionally in different ports. But overall, you know, if you pass an inspection in one port, you should be able to, if you were to go and have an inspection, not that you would because you only get inspected the one time,
right.
But that it would be carried out in the same manner in the next port. And at, I know at the headquarters level, they strive to have that, to have it be, it doesn't matter what port you go to, whether it's East Coast, West Coast, that it be very, very similar, because there have been, you know, some, I don't want to say complaints, but concerns that have been expressed over the years that, you know, I can go to Houston and they do it this way, and I go to New York and they do it another way. So headquarters will go through and look at inspection reports and things like that, and try and clarify policy and right. say, you know, hey, this is what we meant when we put out this NAVIC and things along those lines. So yes, it should be very similar regardless of what port you're in.
Now, you mentioned the 840 book.
Yes.
These inspection criteria, these aren't secret. Mariners can look this up and prepare before they come into port, and we'll include links in the show notes for the podcast. But this, you aren't doing secret things here. These are things that if I'm a mariner, if I'm the master of a ship, I can have these checklists in a binder on my you know, in the wardroom, and
absolutely.
we can be prepared long before we ever come into port.
Absolutely. And they're in compliance with the International Maritime Organization. Of, you know, we signed an agreement of how a port state control program would work, and it won't be exact, but there are certain guidelines that every country who has signed on to SOLAS and other things say, these are the things we're going to look at, and this is the level that we're going to hold you to. And our 840 book basically makes sure that our inspectors are going through and the same in every port, looking at the same types of things and interpreting IMO requirements as well as right. U.S. domestic laws on all these vessels.
Great. Well, we've discussed a little bit about what a mariner can expect when the Coast Guard comes on board. But if I'm a mariner, what kind of things should I perhaps already have prepared, or what should you expect from me as a commercial shipper coming into your port? What kind of things, what can I do besides perhaps being prepared using the 840 books and some of the checklists and things that are available online, or, you know, even through the podcast that we can provide? But what kind of things can I do to make the process smoother, safer, faster?
Well, I think one is making sure that the appropriate crew members are made available to us. You know,
right.
Again, we know that they're in the business of getting in, offloading, right. and getting out of port. But
everybody's in a hurry.
Exactly. But you know, if we need the chief officer, or, you know, chief engineer, you know, provide that, because the longer we have to wait for those things, the longer it's going to take us to be able to say, you know what, your ship is good to go, and
right.
and you can do those things. So making sure that the crews are available is good. I would also say, you know, be honest and upfront. If you know that there's an issue with your vessel, don't wait and see if we find it. You know,
right.
that it doesn't make them look good. It doesn't make us, you know, it is a partnership. Tell us, hey, you have this problem, and we're going to work with, basically the Coast Guard at that point will do whatever it can to work with the crew to make sure that those issues, you know, are addressed and done in as timely a manner as possible. It shouldn't be kind of a gotcha session,
right.
You know, and so as long as they're up front, they have their documents. Again, that's listed in the 840 book, what type of documents we'd need to see. And, mm-hmm. you know, if those things are there and waiting for us when we come up, it just makes the whole process run a lot more smoothly.
So, again, it's a collaboration, and I'm hoping that the listeners and the readers of the Amver blog and Quarterdeck and our umpteen thousand folks that participate in the Amver program know that it's a collaborative process. So, Commander, I thank you for your time, and I'll make sure that we include links to all of the documents that we mentioned so folks can be prepared, have their things ready for when they come to New Haven. And if they do steam into New Haven, I'll make sure that hopefully they'll say, hey, I heard you on the Quarterdeck.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, and to your Amver participants, we thank them for their service and the lives that they've saved over the last 50-plus years.
So. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we're back from listening to that informative talk from Commander Beach about what a ship can expect when coming into a U.S. port, and what the Coast Guard can expect from a master. It's not as Amy mentioned, as Commander Beach mentioned, it's a collaborative effort. Admiral, you can probably speak to that as well. That the Coast Guard boarding a vessel coming into a U.S. port isn't just a gotcha scenario. We're not trying to trip anybody up. In fact, as Commander Beach mentioned, these Coast Guard 840 books are available online. There's no reason that a master or a flag state can't have these things in binders on the ship. We're not out to hide anything, and we'll include links to the Coast Guard 840 books in the podcast. But it is a collaborative effort, isn't it, sir?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the philosophy here is that the entire world now, through the standards that have been agreed upon at the IMO, actually have the standards that people are trained to, and that ship operators, you know, the business side, are committed to providing. So that the seafarers are going to get from one place to another in a safe way. The government agencies, and it's the Coast Guard in the United States, and just about every maritime country has some sort of an authority, either to place their flag on a ship or to make sure there's compliance with these standards as a port state. So the government, I think, plays a very important role in keeping the playing field level between the seafarers and their companies, and between the ports and the ships. And I think that Coast Guard actually does a pretty good job of it. We are, you know, in the middle sometimes between these different entities, and you know, it's hard to keep everybody happy all the time. The ports, I think, are looking to the Coast Guard to make sure that these, you know, large ships with sometimes dangerous cargoes are absolutely safe and non-threatening to their constituents there in the port.
Right.
I think the mariners are looking to the Coast Guard or whatever the agency is in a foreign country to look after their safety and to look after, you know, the fact that they could be put into a situation either by the port or by the owner of the company that is untenable, you know, for them. They're professional mariners, and they have to have a good ship, and they have to have the right support. And then I think the ship owners also benefit from this because they can't observe the mariners all the time anywhere in the world. So, you know, these boardings take place. We make sure the credentials are good. We do some drills from time to time, make sure people are still practicing their profession the way they should.
Right.
And so I think it's a win-win system that's been honed through many, many years of practice and constantly needing improvement, and there's changes and so on. But I'm pretty proud of the way it works.
Well, and thank you. And that's that. You know, really, it's not as if a Coast Guard inspector wakes up in the morning and says, you know, I'm going to go out and get somebody. I mean, you mentioned it, and Commander Beach mentioned it. If there's something that's unsafe for the crew, the Coast Guard will act as a steward to help remedy that situation. So, you know, we're not out to impede commerce. We're not out to just get a ship in and get a ship out, whether it be you know, the Coast Guard's mandate, our responsibility is to protect people, protect property, protect the seas. And this is just kind of a small portion of touching all three of those nodes. The Coast Guard wants to ensure that that crew is going to be safe on that ship, both in port and then when they depart onto their next journey. We want to keep our homeland safe. We want to keep the port safe and the seas and the area where that ship may be sailing. And I'm hoping that through this exchange that perhaps we're going to dispel some rumors that you know, there are problems when sailing to America, and if people take exception to that, perhaps they'll leave us some comments and engage a little bit in the exchange or the debate.
I hope they do. I think that's the value of the means that we have to dialogue with the people that go to sea in a way today that we didn't have in the past. So I would encourage that dialogue. And, you know, I think that anything that is not in law or in a treaty is changeable. So we can take a look at our practices, our routines, even the training of our people that do these inspections, and make changes if there's a good case to do that. And I'm always open for those ideas.
Well, in this podcast, this forum is a great opportunity. People around the world or internationally who may be listening may not necessarily know that you know, my co-host, Admiral Watson, is just that, an admiral, and is a senior leader in the Coast Guard. So if you've got a suggestion or an experience or something you want to share with senior Coast Guard leadership, this is probably the easiest way to get that on your plate, isn't it, sir?
Absolutely. I try to do other engagements with the maritime community, but that's my job. I think it's important that people have access to me and to the staff here so that we can be responsive. And, you know, I think we've got a history of being able to listen and then enact change. So I suspect that they do a pretty fine job up there in New York. That's one of our largest and longest standing operations, really going back to World War I time frame, even before 1915, when the Coast Guard was created. But we want that same proficiency and professionalism in any port that you might come into and be boarded by a team of Coast Guard inspectors.
Well, that was something that Commander Beach mentioned as well. When mariners go online and perhaps look at these at these 840 books, at these inspection books that talk about what a, you know, they lay out specifically what, I mean, these are the checklists that the actual boarding team is going to use to look at things. And since everybody's going to be on that same page, things should be, you know, with the exception of perhaps minor regional differences, things should be pretty much the same around the United States and with each particular Coast Guard team that may be coming aboard. But one of the things, one of the other things you mentioned, sir, is getting out and talking to the mariners, and this is certainly one platform that we use for that. Are you going to be traveling, attending anything in the near future? Is there opportunities where people may have a chance to engage?
Well, I recently attended a meeting of the IFSMA, the International Federation of Shipmasters Associations and the CAM, the Council of American Merchant Mariner Masters, was the host this year in up in Baltimore. That was a great meeting, and we had a good dialogue. So I do those kinds of things. I will, of course, be observing the U.S. National Maritime Day, which is coming up on the 22nd of May. They have a celebration here in Norfolk on Friday the 20th. So those are great opportunities that I never miss. And inevitably, there's events popping on my calendar all the time where I'm asked to present on a particular subject, whether it be navigation safety, marine safety in terms of the ships, or security, or environmental. One of the issues that we're dealing with along the Atlantic coast that's generated a number of meetings, and we just put a notice in the Federal Register of our study that's ongoing, and that'll be subject to public comment, is these wind generators that the Department of Interior is wanting to lease the Outer Continental Shelf blocks to companies to put wind generators out there for making electricity. And of course, there's concerns about navigation safety with them. So that's just an example of the kind of thing that we get involved with.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you mentioned Maritime Day, National Maritime Day, because we're going to be having, I'm going to be out and about a little bit as well. So if people are going to be traveling at all and want to talk to me about AMVR or about our podcast, anything related to the commercial sector or safety, we're going to have our National Maritime Day AMVR Awards dinner on the 23rd of May in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club. And then I'll be hopping on a plane the following day, and we're flying out to Oslo. We'll be at Nord Shipping. AMVR won't have a booth there, but we'll be available to talk and chat if you want. And we're going to be holding an AMVR Award ceremony at the U.S. Ambassador's residence in Oslo to recognize our Norwegian AMVR partners. So we'll be traveling a bit as well. And it's a, like you said, it's a great chance to engage people, you know, and kind of hear the deck plate level of what's going on out in the maritime community. So I'm sure we'll have some reports back from those events. And like you said, we're out, we're available. You can leave comments on the blog here, and we're happy to chat about whatever interests you.
Great.
Well, Admiral, I thank you very much for your time. I hope that our listeners find this particular episode interesting. Perhaps it will spark some debate, and we'll be back next month with a new topic and probably some insight from our travels. Thank you so much for joining us, Admiral.
Well, thank you, Ben. I'll look forward to talking again next month.
You have been listening to The Quarterdeck. Learn more about the AMVR program at amvr.com. The Quarterdeck theme song is called Botany Bay by The Blackbirds. Available at musicalley.com or follow the link in our show notes.
I'm on the way down to the quay where the good ship and anchor lays. To command the gang of navvies, they told me to engage. Well, I thought I'd stop before a point before I went away. But I take a trip on an emigrant ship to the shores of...